You know, it was funny. I try and practice my messages on Christy on Saturdays, and yesterday was no different. And I was practicing with her, and in the process of that, having three toddlers and three other kids on top of that, it's a bit distracting. I had, as a matter of fact, Levi was standing there, and he had his glasses on, and they were slightly crooked. He had a Superman hat on backwards. He had a pair of underwear and one sock. And he was running through, and he's banging on every toy in our house. I don't know who blessed us with so many toys that take batteries that make noise, but my kids love them all, and they decided to use them all while I was trying to practice yesterday. So at any point in time today that your kids get a little bit out of hand, it's not going to bother me. I'm just going to let you know that I have practiced for this. It may bother other people that are sitting around you, and if that's the case, we have room back there, and the nursery has a speaker in it as well. Both of them have speakers, so you can do that, but it's not going to bother me. God has blessed me with the ability to talk through anything at this point in time. So... that's right, that's right. You should see how many times I've stood around with one sock and underwear and a Superman hat on. I just don't have glasses yet. It's coming, it's coming. But 40 is coming, yes, yes, it's here, and I'm grateful for it, something like that. But, you know, I am grateful that it is the fifth week of January, this fifth weekend, getting an opportunity just to be able to celebrate. I've been looking forward to this day. I'm looking forward to the baptism tonight, being a part of that. Actually, Mallory, back there in the back. She came up to me this morning and said, "Pastor Matt, is it all right if I get baptized tonight?" I'm like, "Is it all right? Absolutely all right." And so she's going to be getting baptized. I know Amanda Jo, she's helping her parents out in the nursery over there. She's getting baptized tonight. Omazie, who came last night, he's getting baptized. Andrea Miller is getting baptized tonight. And I might be forgetting somebody off the top of my head, and I apologize for that. But then we also, we have the Lent Coop kids who come on Saturday nights. They were going to get baptized tonight, but they really felt like they wanted to be baptized in a natural body of water. And I said, "That's fine." They said, "Can we get baptized in the Rio Grande? Would that be all right?" I said, "That's perfect, just not right now." So so we're going to pause on them just for a little bit, but I'm excited about what God's doing. We prayed up front to say, "God, we want 52 baptisms this year, one for every week of the year that's represented." And I'm hoping and praying, actually, that God blows our minds and says, 52, psh, got that covered, plus some. So I'm looking forward to that, and I hope that you are as well. I hope you'll be praying along with me on that. Now, speaking of praying along, I'm also excited about the fact we've got back into our series on refocusing, and refocusing on what God is doing and how God is doing it and what we're supposed to be doing as a church. And for the first couple of weeks, we talked about discipleship, and we really have five core values there on the front of your bulletin there, and the five core values will be up here on the screen. They're centered around Jesus. They're centered around the gospel, and really these five core values aren't anything unique to our church. They really should be every church that exists. The things that the church focuses on, and that is discipleship, making disciples. That is prayer and just being in tune with God and following after God. That is worship, that is connection, and that is evangelism. And in those things, we want to make sure that that is where we are at. That is why we do what we do, why we gather together on Sunday mornings, why we have guys and ladies getting together on Saturday nights to be able to worship God and then take this through the week and use that for Him. And over the last 2 weeks, you know, I was pretty convicted on what God was saying to me about discipleship, about the life that we're supposed to live, and about the life that we're supposed to live in Him and not in us, that we're supposed to give up our lives, we're supposed to give up our dreams, supposed to give up our ambitions, supposed to give up those things and chase after God's life that He has for us and chase after God's dreams that He has for us. And that's where we're supposed to be going at. Instead of living for myself, living for God. And that's a big step, because we talked about it last week. The cost of discipleship, well, it's everything. And that's a heavy price to pay when we think about it from ourselves. But think about what we get when we pay that price. We get to say we're growing closer to Jesus. We get to say we're walking with Him and growing in Him. And last week we talked about serving. And we had towels on the back of every chair. And I said, take up your towel like Christ took up His towel when He came down from heaven. And He made Himself to the very lowest point that He took up that towel to serve. My question for you is this, and I don't need you to answer it for me, but did you do that this week? Did you feel the need to take that step out and act as Jesus acted and take on the form of a servant? Did you serve somebody in some way this week? Well, as you ponder that, I want you to also think about this move. We're going to talk about prayer today. And generally, when we talk about prayer in church, it's not the most exciting thing. If I said, hey, on Tuesday night, we're going to have a prayer meeting, people would be like, yay. Because that's kind of what prayer is. For whatever reason, it's not the heartbeat of the church that it is. It's kind of an afterthought. It's kind of the, well, we're going to do it at the beginning of the service, and maybe we'll do it sometime during the message, and that's it. We live that way in our lives as well. Prayer is what we do at the beginning of a meal. We forget how big prayer really is, because prayer, when it comes right down to it, is a lot like discipleship, where we're laying down ourselves. We're saying, I can't do this. I'm coming before God, and I'm asking him to do this in this way. As a matter of fact, Hebrews 4:16 says this, let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Well, I'm not sure about you, but to come confident to the throne of grace means I'm coming in a humble confidence. Because when I realize that I need grace and that I need mercy, it says in a time of need. When I come to that point, I realize that I can't do it on my own. And that's why it's a humble confidence and not something different than that. And that's as we've really looked at these core values, and in probably about the last 6 months, I've been rattling around on these core values and really letting them kind of sink into what we're supposed to be doing as a church. I saw a prayer and I kind of went, oh. And as I went, oh, I kind of went, you know, when we have that reservation about prayer, it makes a question pop up in my mind. And it's a question I really have been battling with as of late, more so probably in the last week or so. And that is this, and I know it's going to sound terrible coming from a preacher, but the question is, do we need God to do what we are doing? Do we need God to do what we're doing? Do we need God right here, right now, for me to stand in front of you and talk about him? Do we need God to sing songs? Do we need God just to have a meeting? The answer is yes. Or is it no? Because when you think about it, I'm not sure if you were here a couple weeks ago when Jerome was talking about the faithless community in the documentary he watched on the faithless community and what they do as a group, and we could call it a church, because a church doesn't have to be centered around God, the original name, Ecclesia, the gathering of the followers. That's kind of where it came from, but we could call it a church, because what they do in those faithless communities when they get together for their church service is they get together and they hang out. And they connect, and they sing songs. They sing popular top 40 songs. And then they have a message of hope. The only thing they're missing is what? Jesus. My question, I think, that really started kicking around with me is, are we the same as them? Are we stopping and pausing and saying, here's Jesus? Jesus is a part of what we are doing. Or are we just getting together, singing some songs that are popular, maybe on the Christian radio versus on the non-Christian radio, and having a message of hope and walking out, and nothing's any different. And that's why that has been kicking around inside of me. You know, as Jerome said, that can we do this without God? Unfortunately, I think the answer is yes. I think lots of churches do this without God. I think they gather together and go through the same routine they've been going through for years and years and years and years, and they miss out on why they're even doing it for him. Now, they'll pray to him as a token. They'll sing to him as a token. They'll talk about him as a token, but they're missing him. Do they really need him? Are they desperate for him? Is it a desperation? Do they desire him? Do they want him? Do they want him to be a part of it? Because sometimes when you invite God to be a part of stuff, your plans get ruined. Think about that for just a second as you let that sink in. I mean, the power of God that is in the Bible, is that what we're inviting here? Is that what we come together for? Like I said, I hope the answer is yes, but are our lives reflecting that hope and that desire and that desperation for who he is? Are our daily lives reflecting that? Are our prayer lives reflecting that? This week, a buddy of mine who's the evangelism director over in Oklahoma, they had their big evangelism conference. He said Lee Strobel was speaking at it. And Lee Strobel's the guy who wrote Case for Christ, the atheist who was trying to disprove God and ended up becoming a Christian in the process of it. Great book, great author, great investigative reporter, wrote all this out. But he was speaking. He said this in his thing, and this is what Mike texted me. He said, Lee said this week, if God were to sit down face to face with you and say, I am going to grant you the answer to every prayer that you've asked for over the last 7 days, how would the world change? How would the world change? And when I saw that text, I went, well, my kids would sleep through the night. That's about as deep as it's going to get right there. My food would be blessed. Isn't that kind of the way it is? I mean, do our lives reflect a desperation of calling out to God? Do our lives reflect a desire of wanting Him to interrupt our plans? Is it in our personal lives? Is it in our family lives? Is it in our church lives? What does it look like? I mean, an honest reflection, an honest self-examination, where would we be if God said, yeah, over the last 7 days, I'm going to. Francis Chan, I love him as a communicator. He wrote the book Crazy Love. He's a pastor up in California. He did a thing probably about 10 years, actually, I know it's 10 years ago because the date's on the front of the video. But I want you to listen to this, if you would, please. Corey?
Off the team, whatever. You know, just there's so much instability, so much that we don't understand, that we don't know. For me, growing up, it was a lot of you guys know my mom died giving birth to me, and my dad remarried. Then my stepmom died in a car accident when I was 9. Then my dad got married again. Then my dad died of cancer when I was 12. And so I'm in junior high. My mom's dead. My stepmom's dead. My dad's dead. The only close relatives I had were my aunt and uncle, George and Sandra. And then when I was in high school, they got in a fight, and my uncle George shot and killed my aunt and then stuck the gun to his own head, killed himself. So I'm 16 years old, and this is life to me, going, man, what's next? Everything seems to be falling apart, and we get a little worried. We get a little scared. And this is what Christians do. You know, they try to serve God, but then things get a little rocky. And things get a little unstable, and so we go, okay, that was nuts. I don't want to live like that. Let me hold on. And this is your routine. This is what so many people do. They go, you know what? I'm not going to try anything crazy. I'm just going to sit here, and I'm just going to hold on. And this is what you look like. You just go. This is what people do. You know what? I'm just going to have my nice little family. We're just going to. You know, we're just going to keep to ourselves. We're going to live in a gated community. I'm going to homeschool my kids, make them wear helmets everywhere. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to let them outside because sun has bad rays. I'm going to, you know, just on and on and on. And you just live your life in the safety of, I don't want to do anything crazy for God. I just want to, you know, go to church on Sundays and maybe give like 2%. And maybe serve, help the nursery, because I feel guilty. And then you do this your whole life, and then you go, your greatest prayer is like, God, you know what? I would love to die in my sleep and not even feel it, and then just go up to heaven. And so you want to die like this, just in your sleep, ooh, right in the middle of a dream, good dream, the dream, you're going to heaven, and you don't even feel it. And then suddenly you wake up, you stand before the judge, and you go, now, could you imagine watching the Olympics, you know, and some girl does that, just gets up there, starts straddling the thing, and then steps off and goes, what is the judge supposed to do on the card? You see, and to me, I go, man, that's the routine that so many Christians are headed for. That's the routine, the boring, I do nothing crazy because I don't want to fall. That's the routine that they're going to live, and then one day it's going to be a shock because they're going to step off that balance beam and realize they're standing before the judge. They're standing before the judge, and you think he's going to look at that routine and go, wow, well done. Well done. You lived the safest life possible. You didn't slip. You didn't fall. See, that's not the life that God's called us to. That's where the majority will head, but I don't want to go where the majority goes.
Isn't that the truth? We love our comfort zones. We love to be in this area where we know it is safe, where we know it is okay. When we look, even the definition of a comfort zone is an environment or a situation in which a person feels in charge, secure, or at ease. Figuratively speaking, it's an established lifestyle in which a person feels comfortable as long as there is no drastic change. I don't know about you. I've prayed that prayer before. God, just take me in my sleep. I don't really want to go out in a bad way. I don't want to have to suffer. I don't want to have to go. Just take me that way. That'd be great. Kind of like that old joke where, you know, take me like my grandfather in his sleep, not like the other 8 passengers that were in the car. You know, that's the mentality. We want to go easy. We want the comfort. We want to be in that zone. And you know, I got something I got to tell you. Aren't you glad that Jesus stepped out of his comfort zone? Aren't you glad that he stepped down out of heaven into this and at the lowest point took up a towel and then took up a cross for you and for me? You know he was out of his comfort zone. You know that wasn't what he desperately wanted. As a matter of fact, at the end, as he's praying in the garden, he says, if there is any other way we can make this happen, let's do that, God. But he went through with it. He followed through with it. He was out of his comfort zone. Let me ask you this question. Last week we talked about that towel. Maybe you served, maybe you didn't. Maybe you said, I'm going to take up that towel just like Jesus did and get down on my hands and knees and wash the nasty off of people's feet, whatever that might look like. And you stepped up and you decided to do that and you said, this is the reason why I'm going to do it. And there was a reason behind it to know that Jesus set the example and that's what he's called us to. But then there's the other side that maybe you said no. Or maybe you said, I'm going to take the towel with me, I'm going to put it in my dash like Matt said, and we'll see how it goes. And you knew exactly how it was going to go. You knew you were going to find an excuse not to do it. Because that's just reality. I can tell you the excuses I would use. The excuses that I would tie in would be something about time. It'd be something about schedule. It'd be something about difficulty. It'd be something about my pride. I can tell you those are the excuses. You know what all those excuses lump into? My comfort zone. I have to get out of my comfort zone in order to do that. And I don't want to get out of my comfort zone. You know why? Because I'm comfortable here. Are you comfortable where you are at? I hope not. I hope not. And we're going to talk about that today as we talk about getting out of your comfort zone, about participating in this thing called prayer. Because when we are truly praying, when we are truly asking God, we are saying, I want you to change me. I want you to take what I am and make it more like you. You know what's going to happen in that process? There's going to be pain. Because growing pains happen as we grow. I can attest to that, and my guess is you can too. It happens physically, and it happens spiritually, and there's going to be those things come along, and we have to understand that, you know, I didn't do meet and greet today because I didn't want to take some people out of their comfort zone. I blessed you with that today, okay? I'm going to ask you afterwards to talk to people. We'll see if that happens, but that we understand. I understand. I'm an outgoing person. I like to talk to people. Some of you are not. And so I said, hey, let's just skip meet and greet today. Let's just move on. We'll do our thing. That might have been the most uncomfortable thing you've had to do today. Well, guess what? Today, we're going to blow you out of the water with what I'm going to ask you to do. We're going to pray that God shakes us. We're going to pray that he changes us. We are going to pray. And praying in itself is naturally uncomfortable. Have you ever sat? If I said, hey, we're going to pray for 3 minutes right now. Ready, go. You guys would stare at your watches going, this is the longest 3 minutes of my life. Because prayer is uncomfortable. Prayer makes us feel out of the box. Prayer puts me not in charge, kind of like that comfort zone thing. I'm in charge. I'm at ease. I know what's going on. I understand this. Prayer puts us outside of that because you are going before God and saying, God, it's all you, bro. Hopefully you don't call him bro. That'd be bad. But the whole idea is you're saying it's in your court. I am not. You are. You're the one that's in charge. I am just a servant. Tell me what to do. And that's an uncomfortable place because you don't know what he's actually going to say. Because if your heart actually means and your desperation actually means and your desire actually means, I want that to happen, he's going to make it happen. And it's going to change you. It's going to change what you do. It's going to change how we are. Prayer is outside of our comfort zone. Because our prayer should be about our desperation for God and our realizing our desire, our realization that we cannot do it and that he can. You realize that when Jesus prayed, that when Jesus modeled prayer, when Jesus lived and Jesus modeled life, that he was setting the example for us. And if you go to the book of Luke and the book of Acts, book of Luke was written by Luke, book of Acts was written by Luke, book of Luke focused on the gospel of Jesus Christ, book of Acts was it being acted out by those who were following him. There's over 50 mentions of prayer. And the prayers that were taking place. And as Jesus modeled those prayers, you see it play out in the book of Acts the same way. And as Jesus modeled prayer, there is something that is very specific in those prayers and why he prayed. Do you know why Jesus prayed? I mean, Jesus is God. So was he talking to himself? He was talking to his Father. You know, how did that all play itself out? But as he was doing it, he was modeling it for us, and he was telling the people that were following him, including us, that I cannot do anything outside of my Father. He said those words. And you know what he told us later in John chapter 15, verse 5? Apart from me, you can do what? Nothing. That's what prayer is. That's us connecting. That's us building that relationship. That is where desperation should come in because I can't do anything on my own. So I have to go to him. I'm desperate for God to use me so I don't just waste my breath and waste my life. But that in itself is out of my comfort zone. Because our comfort zone isn't pretty much just us cruising. Isn't it pretty much us just being in a routine, whether it be as a church or be as an individual? It's just making it happen. Isn't that where we don't really need God because we've already got it all figured out? We can do this, this, and this. But when God takes us to that next step, our life begins outside of our comfort zone. He's called us outside of that comfort zone. We need to be desperate. Desperate for his grace and desperate for his mercy and desperate for his power. But let me ask you, what does desperation mean? What does desperation look like to you? How does it play itself out? Desperation, definition, recklessness brought on by great urgency and anxiety. Desperation, showing extreme courage, especially of actions courageously undertaken as a last resort. Desperation, showing extreme urgency or intensity, especially because of great need or desire. Is that how we describe our relationship with God? Are we at that last resort saying, I can't do this, I need you? And calling out to him. When I think of desperation in a picture, I think of a parent or parents who are on their last little bit because their kid is so sick, their child is so sick, they would be willing to pay any price or do anything to make sure that they survived whatever that was. That is desperation. When I see a husband or a wife or both at the place of desperation where they understand their marriage is falling apart and they will pay any price or do anything to make sure it stays together. That is desperation. That is the picture of what I see. Desperation only comes when we recognize there's a need that we cannot meet on our own. Desperation and recklessness, it's marked with danger. It's marked with all kinds of unknowns. It's outside of our comfort zone. You know, I had Jerome bring in this mirror. Bianca, thanks for letting us borrow it. But I wanted to literally take a moment and reflect. And I want you to look at yourself in that mirror. Can you guys all see yourselves in that mirror? I was holding it at the ceiling last night. It didn't work real well. But you see yourself in that mirror. When you think of desperation, is that what you think of? When you see a desperate person in a movie, when you're reading in a novel, somebody who's desperate, is that the picture of desperation that you see as an individual or as a church? I don't. I looked in the mirror And I said that to myself. I don't see desperation. I see flashes of it. Every once in a while, I get desperate. When we adopted Lily and Levi and Indale, all three of them, at the start of the two and the start of the one, we had zero money. And there were points in time in that they said, hey, you owe us $10,000. You owe us $15,000. It needs to be due by Friday. That brings on some desperation. And God came through. Because we went to him in a desperate need and said, God, you've called us to this. Now bring us through it. And I look at that and that was a flash. Because then I go back to my comfort. Then I go back to my little zone. Not that utter recklessness in our pursuit for God. How many of us are really willing to risk all that we have and all that we are in pursuit of all that God has and all that he wants us to be? I mean, honest self-examination. When we really take a look, is that where we are in our hearts? Is that where we are in our minds? Is that where we are in Christianity? Are we just hugging that balance beam, waiting to get off? Is that where we're at? I guess the question is what does desperation look like? And in desperation for God, I wrote down three things. Number one, I'd be less concerned about my own needs. If I were desperate for God, a desperate man does not cling too tightly to anything. He realizes everything is willing to be sacrificed to get what you need. Think about it with the parents. Think about it with a marriage. Think about the most desperate time you've ever been in. You would do anything. You're not going to hold on to things and say, I would do anything but that. The second thing I saw was I'd be less worried about the obstacles or difficulties that are in the way. If I had to, I'd run through a brick wall and bust it down if that's what it took to save one of my children. If that's what it took to make sure that something had to be done. We will not let any obstacle stand in our way. And the third one is this, I'd spend my time and my attention differently. See, a desperate man doesn't spend a whole lot of time vegging out on the couch. He saves that for the hopeless man. He goes laser focused, knowing what he's been called to do and how he needs to accomplish it. See, one of my favorite stories is found in the Bible. A lot of favorite stories are found in the Bible. But one of my favorites in the Bible is Mark chapter 2. It's Mark chapter 2, and it's about four buddies bringing their paralyzed friend to meet Jesus. I'd love for you to open up to Mark chapter 2. If you don't have it, it's on your YouVersion app, or it'll be up here on the screen to follow along. But even as we get into it, I just pray that God speaks to us through this passage today. So let's pray together. Father, we are grateful. We're grateful that we get to come into your presence because of your son, Jesus. God, even this morning, I pray that you shake us. I pray that you break us. I pray that you knock that rust off of us or that comfort off of us and make us uncomfortable this morning. I pray it in your name. Amen. As we look at God's word here, Mark chapter 2, starting in verse 1, it says this, and when he'd returned to Capernaum after some days, it was reported that he was at home, and many were gathered together. Because remember, we talked about this last week. We've talked about this many times. He was a rock star. Lots of people wanted to see what was going on. He was the movies then. He was what entertained people, and people wanted to gather around. And not only that, they wanted to hear what he had to say because some of the things he was saying were completely opposite of what they've heard their whole lives, and they were in awe. So all these people gathered together. So there was no more room, not even at the door, and he was preaching the word to them. I mean, imagine the scene. This place is completely packed, and we don't know how big this place was. We don't know. We know it had a roof on it. We'll see that here in just a moment. But it was completely packed. Now, some of you might be looking around here going, this place is completely packed right now. That's not the case, okay? But in our minds, sometimes we have this idea that if I have to sit next to somebody, then it's too full. I want to have at least one chair between me and my family. You don't believe it in church? That's fine. Go to the movie theater. When you walk into the movie theater and you go, oh, there's no seats. Even though there's 150 down front, you're like, there's no seats. And so you go back and say, I need a new ticket. Or you ask at the ticket counter and say, well, where are the seating's about 80% full. Okay, we'll give you the next showing. Because for us, that's packed. I want you to picture this. This place is packed where there is no room. There are people blocking the door, people blocking the windows, and all of this is going on. And this is what happens in verse 3. And they came, bringing to him a paralytic carried by four men. So we see these four buddies trying to help out another buddy who couldn't get to Jesus on his own. Four guys that were willing to take time out of what they were doing to introduce another guy to Jesus. That's a whole other message in itself, but I think it speaks pretty clearly right there by itself. There's these four guys, and they want to make this move, and they're going in, and guess what happens? There's some pretty serious obstacles in the way. I'm not sure if you've ever had to try and carry somebody, whether you're with four people or not, but it's not real easy to get through a crowd when you're carrying somebody, especially carrying somebody who's a paralytic on a mat. And they realize the obstacles that are in their way. They realize that this is going to take place, and so they look at their buddy. You know what they tell him? Tough luck, bud. Just no way. Not going to happen, right? No, that's not what they say. They realize how desperate he is. They realize in themselves, because Jesus even mentions it, because of their faith, not just his faith, but their faith. So we see the desperation come over them. They realize there's obstacles in the way. And guess what? Obstacles are always going to be in your way if you have to get outside of comfortable. Obstacles will always be in your way. So guess what they do? They look at their friend and they say, well, we got to find another way in. We can't go through a window. We can't go through a door. What's next? Oh, I got an idea. How about a roof? We'll just rip the roof off the place. Who comes to that point? What point in time, if the church was full, if you said, oh, you know what, guys? I got an idea. We're going through the roof. Nobody's going to do that. That's insane. But these guys, they realized the desperation, and they had to get to Jesus. And this is what they did. They removed the roof, and when they'd made an opening, they let down on the bed which the paralytic lay. I mean, just picture that. Picture that. That is the obstacle that was in their way, and they overcame that obstacle by going to, well, some pretty serious steps. Think about this. There was physical toil that took place, because you don't just rip through a roof. There was some financial toil that was going to take place, because the guy who owned the house was like, you just ripped through my roof. But they were willing to go to those lengths because they wanted their friend to meet Jesus. They knew what was about ready to come. You know there's going to be obstacles in your way. You know when there's something there, you have this desperation. You know your family's going to stand in your way. You know your friends are going to stand in your way. You know your job's going to stand in your way. You know who's going to stand in the way the most, though? You. You're going to stand in the way of yourself. You're going to come up with any excuses. We're the best salesmen in the room. Do you realize that? I can sell myself on anything. You can sell yourself on anything if you try hard enough. We will sell ourselves to stay comfortable. We can say, I'm too tired to pray. I don't want to get up early and pray. I like my sleep. I don't want to pray before I go to bed, or I'll fall asleep while praying. I'm too hungry to fast. I like food. It's just reality. I do. And we move through these things. We have all these different things. I'm too broke to give to God. I don't have the abilities or the gifts to give to him. Desperation always finds a way. And we see these guys do it. Think about the other desperate people in the Bible. Zacchaeus, a richest man in town, wanted to see Jesus. So what does he do? A very classy thing for rich men in town. He climbs a tree. There was an obstacle. He overcame it. Think about the lepers. When they saw Jesus across the crowd, they wanted to get to him. You know what Jewish law said? They're not allowed to go through a crowd because they have leprosy. And they said, I'm throwing that to the wind. I am desperate to get to Jesus. Think about the woman just a few chapters later in Mark chapter 5 that had been bleeding for 12 years. Once again, don't touch her. She's apart from us. She's not allowed to be a part of the crowd. And Jesus comes to her town, and in the process of coming to her town, it says that the people thronged around him, that there are people everywhere. And she said, I have to get to him. I've been to every doctor. I've been to all these things, and I've only gotten worse. I have to get to him. And she pushes her way through the crowd, and she says, all I need to do is touch his garment. I don't have to interrupt him. I don't have to ask him for anything. And she reaches out, and she grabs his garment, and she is healed. And Jesus feels the power leave him. He says, who touched me? And all the disciples are like, we're in a crowd of thousands of people. Who do you think touched you? And he goes, no, somebody touched me because I felt the power leave me. And he responds to that woman the same way he responds to these men. Your faith has made you well. Picking up in verse 5, it says, and when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, sons, your sins are forgiven. Now, some of the scribes were sitting there questioning in their hearts. I love that phrase, in their hearts. They weren't questioning out loud. How many times do we question in our hearts, no matter who we're having an argument with? We question in our hearts. We're not going to say it out loud, but we sure are thinking it. And these guys are thinking it, and they think this. Why does this man speak like that? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone? And immediately, Jesus, perceiving in his spirit that they questioned within themselves, he realized they did it. So he said to them, have you ever had that place before where somebody answers the question that you've never asked, but you're thinking it? Yeah, neither have I, but these guys got it. It hits them right between the eyes, and this is what he says. He says to them, why do you question these things in your heart? Which is easier to say to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven, or to say, rise and take up your bed and walk? But that you may know the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, this is what he says to the paralytic. I say to you, rise, pick up your bed, and go home. And he rose and immediately picked up his bed and went out before them all, so they were all amazed and did what? Glorified God. He didn't take the glory for himself. They glorified God. In the process of glorifying God, saying, we've never seen anything like this. Isn't that an amazing story? Isn't that an amazing story of desperation that in the end glorifies God? Isn't that the story that we should have in our life, the desperation that ends up glorifying God? In everything that we do, in the way that we go, I would be willing to go all in if it would happen here today. I would be willing to give it all to see it all happen on a day that we could say, did you see what happened? God is amazing. But we look at the Bible and say, that's just the Bible, right? That was 2,000 years ago. Is God different then than he is today? Is God different then than he is today? I'm sorry, let me try to ask that one more time. Is God different? These kids are louder than you right now. So, is God different then than he is today?
No.
Do you believe that, though? And as we look at that, and as we take that on, and we hold that in our hearts, why are we not calling out for that power? Why are we not desperate for that? Why are we stuck and comfortable? Desperation comes when you've run out of options. You guys know I like football. You guys know I like the Packers. This year, they weren't as good as they should have been. But they had two pretty amazing plays that made my heart stop. Two amazing plays that at the very end of the game, they were out of all options. As a matter of fact, one of them, the first one happened in December, and it was about halfway through the game. They're playing on a Thursday night against the Detroit Lions, and they were getting beat 17-0 at halftime. Coming out of halftime, they were down 24-0, and I said, I'm done. I turned it off. I went to a movie with Corey. Middle of the movie, my phone starts lighting up. Did you see that? Can you believe that catch? And I'm like, what's going on? And so I'm looking, I'm like, oh, forget the movie. We got to go. I got to see. I TiVo'd it. So it was good. It was good. And so I got home, and I started going through, and I'm like, what's going on? And sure enough, boom. What did they call it? The last play of a game. Aaron Rodgers hucks it up, and it's a Hail Mary. Isn't that funny that it's a prayer? Isn't it funny that it all ties together like that? So that happened, and we saw the game, and I'm like, what? And I showed Cannon and all the kids the next morning. I'm like, you guys got to see this. It's awesome. And I read all this stuff, and people are like, why don't we do stuff like that more often? And I'm like, it's because we had no options left. That's not a play in the playbook during the second quarter. That's not what you do. It's at the end of the game when there's no options left. And guess what? They did it again 2 weeks ago. Who does it two times in a season? And what defense lets it happen two times in a season? But I watched it, and I went, that is what we are to live our lives as, where there is no other option. Because we play through the playbook and we play through our own things and we forget what the coach is calling, to listen to him, to follow him, to be desperate for him. And that is where it is at. That's where we're supposed to be. Have you ever noticed how desperate a desperate person acts? You know, I think about this, and I think about it probably in a fairly negative sense. But some probably the most desperate people I've ever met are drug users. desperate for their next fix, desperate for that next hit, desperate for that next feeling, whatever that drug gives them. They will steal, they will kill, they will destroy, they will do whatever it takes to get that. My question for the church is why does a drug user have more desperation for something that is temporal than us having desperation for something that is eternal? How come a drug user can be desperate than a disciple who should be fully relying on who God is? Why is that? You know, if we were to let somebody desperate into the service, would they embarrass us? Would they throw off our plans? Would they make this something that went, whoa? I can't imagine the planners who were planning out Jesus' little talk in that house, and then all of a sudden a roof gets ripped off, that their plans weren't just messed up a little bit. I'm pretty sure if somebody ripped off the roof here, first Chuck would be really mad, and then I'd be like, what? You know we'd be like that, because everything just got thrown off kilter to see what God was going to do, to see how it was going to play itself out. My question is, are we desperate for Jesus and the power of God, or are we in love with comfort? It's a very simple question. As a matter of fact, when we're in church, we have a church answer. Well, of course I love Jesus, because if I said anything different, it would make me uncomfortable, which would ruin my love of comfort. Right? I got some honest evaluation things here for us to help us answer the question truthfully. The questions are this, 7 of them. Number one is, are you just a fan or are you a player? Are you just a fan or are you a player? See, the players are on the field. The players are laying it all on the line. The players know there's injury involved. The players know the game plan. The players know all of these things. What do the fans do? The fans will cheer them on or they will criticize them when things aren't going the way they think they should. But they're never in there in the middle of it all. They might feel the emotion of it, but they're never in there, because when their players are in there, they're grimacing. They're feeling the pain. They're getting hit. They're getting concussed. They're getting beat up. There's times that they're going to break something. There is going to be real battle involved. And the fans just sit back and go, oh, that's a bummer. And are you just a fan or are you in the middle of it, desiring to play and desiring to move forward? Second question is this. Are your desires and passion for God stagnant? Are your desires and passion for God stagnant? See, I already said this. Christians should live with a healthy uncomfort. We should live that way. If your desires be more like him and have passion to see that happen, you're going to grow and you're going to have those growing pains. I read this once. It said, if you're not uncomfortable, you're probably stuck at an acceptable level. Are you stuck at an acceptable level? Are you stagnant? That's what stuck means. Third one is, you talk like you don't believe in God. Do you talk like you don't believe in God? Whatever you're passionate about, that's what you're going to talk about. Whatever you are passionate about, that's what you're going to talk about. If you're passionate about sports, you're going to talk about sports. If you're passionate about music, you're going to talk about music. If you're passionate about adoption, you're going to talk about adoption. If you're passionate about God, guess what you're going to talk about? God. Does your passion carry over to that? Because what you're passionate about, you want other people to be passionate about. You want other people to understand why you're passionate about it, and you're going to talk about it. Are you passionate about God? Number four, do you keep God in a box? See, I understand God is necessary for salvation. I understand that his son came and died for me so that I could live, so that I could have an eternal relationship with him, and that someday when I die, I will be in heaven with my heavenly Father. I understand that. But my question is, does it stop there? Is that where God stops at for you? Or does he take the throne of your life? Does he move you forward? Because is he be the one that you completely and totally rely on? I don't want to mess up the name, but I'm pretty sure his name is George Mueller, and he's the guy that had the orphanage in England back in like the 1700s and 1800s. And George Mueller asked for absolutely zero donations from anybody. And when they needed something, they gathered together and prayed, and the door would knock, and they would be there. And it's an amazing story to read about him in the orphanage. And he had tens of thousands of orphans come through his orphanage. And he constantly relied on God with whatever it was, and God would provide. Is that us, or is that too weird? Number 5, you begin to compromise. You know, I think about the Israelites. The Israelites are a classic example. We talked about them during Friday morning's men's Bible study. But they did so many amazing things with God, and then they would just be dumb. Think about this. The Israelites are standing at the edge of the Red Sea, okay? Let's just be really honest. That sounds like a problem. And also the Red Sea opens wide open because God has allowed them to walk on dry land across it. So he's walking on dry, all these guys are walking on dry land across it. Here come the Egyptians chasing, and you know, here it comes, and they're like, wow, did you just see what God did? And how much longer was it that they were standing at the bottom, waiting on bottom of the mountain, waiting on Moses to get the Ten Commandments, and they said, hey, you know what, we probably should build a golden calf. Does that sound dumb to you or what? They just saw how amazing God was, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, we forgot. Think about this. When Joshua leads them into the promised land, in the promised land, they face their first obstacle of Jericho, and being an amazing military leader, Joshua's plan goes by the wayside, and they follow God's marching around the city and blowing trumpets at the end of it all, and the walls all fall down. I'm not sure if you think that's awesome or not, but that is awesome. And not too much longer later, they get comfortable. They have conquered all the enemies that are in the promised land, but they get comfortable. They get comfortable in their homes, and they start doing what? Worshiping other gods. Stupid. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that at church. Sorry, kids. Dumb is a poor idea. And I say, how can they do that? And then I look at my own life, and I have real evaluation and go, ooh, wait a second. Guilty. I do the same thing. I watch God do something amazing in my life, and then I just ease my way back to let comfort shackle me into what I'm not supposed to be doing. Number six, Christian living becomes a list of don'ts. Christian living becomes a list of don'ts. Instead of living out righteousness for the do's that God's called us to, we just live out righteousness by don't do this. At least don't do it in public where other people see us. Is that what God has called us to? Is a list of don'ts? Or has he called us a list of do's? Has he called us to a list of see the poor, see the hungry, see the powerless, see those who are having things done to them that shouldn't be done to them? Are we seeing that? Are we seeing those who are hurting? The people that don't know Jesus, is our heart breaking for the do's of we need to show God to them? Or are we more about don't do this and don't do that? Mark Batterson, who wrote some great books on prayer, pastor in Washington, D.C., said this, you can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. You can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. The seventh one is this. Is every person in your circle act like you? See, that's what makes us comfortable. Because if we invited a bunch of people in to fill up the empty seats that are in here that weren't like us, we'll just label them the worst of the worst. Would you feel comfortable in here? Would you try and find another seat? Would you not want that person sitting next to you? How might that play itself out? Because we like to surround ourselves with other people that are like us. We don't think the gospel is for the whole world. We think the gospel is for the people that are like us. We get comfortable. My question today that you need to really dwell on is, are we comfortably following or are we desperately following? Are we comfortably following just kind of in coast mode, holding on to the balance beam, or are we desperately following, saying, God, the next move is yours and we are here with you. Whatever you challenge us to do. Are we in desperation mode or are we in coast mode? I ask that because of this. I'm excited about what God has for our future. I'm excited about what God is going to do. I'm excited to see how he's going to play out all the things that are coming. I'm excited about the baptism. I'm excited about life change. That's a huge step. And maybe that's a step you need to take. Maybe you need to be a part of that tonight. That's the first big step in saying, I'm going to get outside my comfort zone. And even Mallory, I asked her, I said, are you a little nervous? And she said, yeah, I got to stand in front of a bunch of people. And I said, and those people are going to be cheering for you and praying for you and challenging you in the growth that you have. But yeah, standing in front of people can be a little scary. But that's a step you have to take. That's a step you have to take to say, I am a follower of Jesus. I asked her, I said, well, why do you want to do it? She said, well, I'm a follower of Jesus and I want everybody to know it. I said, boom. You got it. You nailed it. And all the people I've talked to, same thing. I'm excited about the future. I believe God is working. I don't bring this message of prayer to bring one and say, oh, I'm a failure, self-pity. But instead, to call revival in our hearts to light that passion, to get us ready, to get us excited about what we're going to be doing, about seeing the transformation power of God pour out of us as we break down that wall between us and Him, and then break down the next wall between us and the obstacles that are in the way of sharing that. I said it already, life begins at the end of our comfort zone. And as today is a focus on prayer, I'd like to ask you to do me a few favors as I ask Jerome to come up. And that is this. I'd like to ask you to pray. It's going to be a little bit uncomfortable, but that's okay. Because I just said it's going to be that way. It's going to be a little bit awkward, but that's okay. It might even be a little bit challenging. Because of what I'm going to ask you to pray. I pray, first of all, and I would ask you to pray that God would make you uncomfortable. That He would shake your comfort zone. That He'd break that off. Break off the shackles of comfort to say, I want to follow Him. I want you to pray for your neighbor that the same thing would happen to them. I want you to pray for our church that we never get to the point of just being comfortable and doing it just for the sake of doing it. I want you to pray that God would move us outside of this box and do something that we could only say has ever happened in Scripture. I mean, think about that. Think about all the amazing things that God did in Scripture. Why doesn't it happen today? Is it because we don't ask? That's what I want you to do. I'm going to ask you to take like 3 minutes and just pray for those things. Just pray that God would move us. And you know what the funny thing is one of the guys came up to me last night, Omazier, who's getting baptized. He said, Pastor Matt, I hope you're okay that when you asked us to pray, I didn't pray for those things. I prayed that God would give me the want to need Him. And I said, okay, I'm okay with that. You don't have to do what I say in that area. I would pray that God would give me the want to need Him too, because there's a big difference between wants and needs. Like I said, we're going to take about 3 minutes to do that. And Jerome's just going to play in the background. And the great thing is it leads right into a song that says, Lord, I need you. So I want that song to be a continued part of this prayer.
is indeed alive. That you are not a golden calf that is fashioned from our hands, but we are fashioned in your likeness instead. God, I'm grateful for your word and all the truths that you've preserved in it. And I'm thankful that you give us the encouragement to be able to know that we don't have to fear what happens to our bodies, because in the end we win. You are a safety net that catches us when we fall. God, we give you all the praise and the glory, and we're so grateful that we have absolute trust in you.